Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey folks, today's show is brought to you in part by Untuck It. Ever wonder why traditional button-up shirts look so long and baggy? Well, that's because they were never meant to be worn that way. Untuck It shirts were specifically designed to be worn untucked. No tucking and no tailoring needed with Untuck It shirts. Buying shirts used to make me crazy, but Untuck It has changed everything. Their shirts fit because they make one for every kind of guy, tall like me, short, slim, and even guys with the bulging biceps, and guys of every different age. Untuck It shirts come in 50 different fits. You can check out my black V-neck oily bohunk t-shirt from Untuck It on my Instagram account. That's the Bob Seska. And yes, they have your fits too. They even offer free shipping and free returns on all U.S. orders. And right now, you can get 20% off your first purchase at untuckit.com with the promo code BOBC. Don't put this off. Go now to untuckit.com or visit one of the 50 Untuck It stores in the U.S. or Canada and try one for yourself. And if you want the perfect fitting shirt, no matter your size or shape, try the original Untuck shirt. Untuck It. And don't forget to use that promo code BOBC to get 20% off your first purchase at untuckit.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
CJ, you're aware of the fire that happened at King Fata Middle School?
Yeah. That's a tragedy. Chris?
Saudi News is reporting that rescuers were prevented from getting to several female students by the religious police.
Yeah, I read that too. Steve?
Does the White House have a comment?
I literally just got this a minute and a half ago. I haven't spoken to the president or chief of staff, state, or anyone in communications. This is just me.
Well, do you have a comment?
I don't, no.
CJ. Look, I'm sorry, CJ, but you're not outraged by this?
Outraged? I'm barely surprised. This is a country where women are allowed to drive a car. They're not allowed to be in the company of any man other than a close relative. They're required to adhere to a dress code that would make a Mary Knoll nun look like Malibu Barbie. They beheaded 121 people last year for robbery, rape, and drug trafficking. They have no free press, no elected government, no political parties. And the royal family allows the religious police to travel in groups of six carrying nightsticks, and they freely and publicly beat women. But Brutus is an honorable man. 17 schoolgirls were forced to burn alive because they weren't wearing the proper clothing. Am I outraged? No, Steve. No, Chris. No, Mark. That is Saudi Arabia, our partners in peace.
Bob Seska!
Today's Rachel Maddow Show Award for Headline Excellence goes to Bob Seska.
The Bob Seska Show.
Damn right. And they pay cash. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, September 17, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. It is the greatest soap in the universe. Hi, what's up? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Day 971 of the Trump crisis, day 6 of the impeachment of Donald Trump, 413 days until the 2020 presidential election, and sitting in for the vacationing Buzz Burbank. Hello, Johnson.
Pursuing the agenda of manicide, here's Kimberly.
Hi, it's Kimberly A. Johnson from the Start Me Up podcast. I got to turn on your microphone. There you go.
Here I am.
Patreon.com/startmeup. And of course, those of you who listen to the after party know Kimberly quite well. you had a gigantic week last week.
Yeah, I did. I could use some more followers, though. More patrons.
Yeah, that's right. Patreon.com/startmeup. Well, you can go over there now and you can listen to your interview with Gloria Allred, Tim Wise, Kristen Johnston, and Holland Taylor. Yeah. That was all that last week. That was just
yeah,
one
and
week.
Actually, I was hoping to also get GOP presidential candidate Joe Walsh.
Oh, what's happening who, there?
Well, nothing. You know what happened was, very quickly, I invited him on the show. He sent me a DM on Twitter and said, yes, let's get send me an email to this address and let's get something scheduled. So I do. I don't hear from him. A few days go by, I send him another email and takes him about a day and a half to reply, and he says, I promise we'll get something scheduled soon.
Yeah.
That was not last Sunday, but the Sunday before. So I've taken to now emailing him every day and offering him dates, and, you know, we'll see what he does. I have a plan. I have a feeling he's just blowing me off now. And I can, you know, I can either call him out publicly on Twitter and say, why aren't you doing this? Which I'm not going to do right now. So please, hopefully nobody will do that. But, you know, I'm not sure where I'm going to go. But if he chooses to ignore me, mm-hmm. I plan on making him regret it.
See, now you know what it's like to be his ex-wife. His deadbeat,
yeah, or his
of course.
Kids.
Jesus. We're laughing to keep from screaming.
Yes.
By the way, I've decided for the rest of the show, I'm just going to call you Corn Pop.
Oh, God.
Jesus.
No, we'll I'm going to call you Pony Boy.
Stay golden. Okay, so Corey Lewandowski is testifying in the House Judiciary Committee right now. And by testifying, I mean not testifying. He's not saying anything. In fact, I have a clip here of Corey Lewandowski inside the House Judiciary Committee. Here we go. See, there you go. That was
oh, wow.
Corey Lewandowski.
Well, you know what? I haven't been watching, so I haven't missed anything.
He's jumping between not answering mm-hmm. and then saying that the White House has instructed him not to answer every question that was asked by Jerry Nadler. Where I can't seem to find. It's the same bullshit that we've been seeing from one administration official after another. And I know Corey Lewandowski has never been an administration official, but he was certainly involved in the Trump campaign in 2016. And he's just refusing to answer. He's and not doing it in a way in which he's either claiming the Fifth Amendment or some kind of executive privilege. You just say, well, they asked me and I said, well, OK. And then he's doing that just awful filibustering yeah. where it's just, I can't find that page. Where did I say that? And then finally he finds it. They have to actually stop the clock for him to find in the Mueller report, because also he had to borrow someone else's copy of the Mueller report because oh he didn't bring God. The Mueller report along with him, even though he says in his opening remarks that he's required to stay within the quote unquote four corners of the Mueller report. But he didn't bring the Mueller report with him to reference it all.
Of course not.
He's just being a great big dick. Great yeah. big
you dick.
Exactly.
Yep.
And then, of course, the ranking member on the Republican side is one of our favorite members of the House of Representatives, quickly eclipsing Louis Gohmert on this front. Because I swear to God, every time Doug Collins starts talking, I swear I'm looking at someone like a villain from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It's like this guy's from a Dust Bowl era road movie or something, you know? But here's an actual clip of Doug Collins in his opening remarks.
The old rules are the new rules are the old rules. These were new rules. These were rules that were here all along.
What the hell was that? That was actually a sitting member of Congress. In fact, he is the ranking member. He's the ranking yeah. member, and this is how great he is.
The old rules are the new rules are the old rules. These were new rules. These rules were here all along.
Did he say that today?
Yes. He said that just before we started.
Oh, my God.
The old rules are the new rules are the old rules. These were new rules. These rules were here all along.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Is you is or is you ain't my constituency.
Yeah, right. Yeehaw!
Yeah, he's campaigning on the back of a flatbed truck with a dwarf carrying a broom. That's the great Doug Collins. Okay.
And so, but, you know. What, that was that Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, that yeah. was Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Yeah, yeah. yeah. But, you know, I didn't expect Corey Lewandowski to say much of anything anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we were all looking at this.
You were
You could do something.
The thing is, that's deliberate. He's not
right.
tongue-tied. He's just, it's a big F you. Yeah. It's an F you, Jerry Nadler. It's an F you to the Democrats. These are profoundly angry, vindictive, paranoid men.
Yes.
I mean,
absolutely.
If you, again, there's that old trope about the lump of coal turning into a diamond. I swear to God, Corey Lewandowski is crapping diamonds.
Wow.
He is such a tight ass. He is just, I mean, all of these guys just look like springs that are wound too tightly and they're just ready to explode at any minute. So Trump ordered two former White House aides not to testify. I don't think we're getting Rob Porter and Rick Dearborn today. Rob Porter, of course, is the guy who resigned under accusations of, what was it, spousal abuse? Was that it?
Yes.
That was part of your agenda of manicide, I assume. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Rick Dearborn isn't going to show up either. They were both subpoenaed to appear in front of the committee today, but the White House asserted immunity for both of them. Lewandowski, of course, couldn't because he never worked for the White House.
Right.
He's just being a dick. That's the White House asked me to be a dick, so I've come down here just to be a dick. And, you know, he was ordered not to answer any questions about topics where Trump could invoke executive privilege and not give any information beyond what is already in the Mueller report.
It's just so it's exhausting.
Yeah. Well, so all of this is happening right now as we speak.
Yeah.
Corey Lewandowski stalling. Doug Collins saying
the old rules are the new rules, the new rules are the old rules. These rules were here all along.
Yeah, you know, like he just said. I mean, Rude Pundit was just saying that they need to just toss Lewandowski in jail now.
Yes,
and I couldn't agree more. I mean, enough fucking around.
Yeah,
tiptoeing around these people.
And then Trump will pardon him.
Okay, so the next nightmare is this. Are we going to war in the Middle East to defend the Saudis? You know, our partners in peace, who are paying in cash, which is, I guess, one of the reasons why Donald Trump is bowing down to them. I mean, specifically paying cash to Jared Kushner. And here's kind of what I've been observing. It seems like there's a pattern developing, and the latest iteration of the pattern being this attack on this oil pipeline in Saudi Arabia. How long ago was the Taliban thing? That was like last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was like last weekend.
Ago, somewhere way back, like a week ago, which seems like 1,000 years ago. So Donald Trump floats this idea of inviting the Taliban to Camp David to negotiate. And
he wanted to pal around with terrorists.
Exactly. And that blows up in his face. And then he claims that there was some sort of attack. And that now the Taliban is going to be, we're going to hit them the hardest they've ever been hit. And so he goes on, he talks about how they, you know, the American military apparently attacked the Taliban in retaliation for this thing that happened right around the time he floated inviting them to Camp David. So that was one iteration of this pattern that I'm seeing. And he floats this meeting with Iran without preconditions. But then he backpedals under pressure and then this pipeline attack. And now Trump is threatening to attack Iran because of the Saudi attack, apparently. I mean, this is kind of the brinksmanship that we're dealing with on behalf of this erratic, ridiculous president. So I don't know. Is that a pattern? It's like it starts out with Trump.
Seems like it is.
Trump doing something irrational about either inviting the Taliban to Camp David or meeting with Iran without preconditions and then having to backpedal and then having to overcompensate following a mysterious attack that takes place right around the same time. He's presenting these ludicrous overtures.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that a pattern? Is that,
cause if it walks like a pattern and talks like a pattern.
Yeah, exactly. What does Doug call it?
The old rules are the new rules. The new rules are the old rules. These were new rules. These rules were here all along.
He sounds like one of those guys at an auction.
Right. So I don't know. This is just what I'm seeing. And it could be completely innocent, but...
Yeah, I'm sure it's innocent.
Sure, yeah. Because everything Donald Trump does is totally on the level. But, I mean, there is the possibility. And again, I'm just floating this. I'm not married to this idea. This is not something I am convinced about. I'm just suggesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, what if we attack the Saudi Arabian oil field or whatever it was? I mean, who's to know? I mean, he's got his own people snowed with the border wall. Mm-hmm. He can say whatever he wants about that wall.
Yeah.
It's not like anyone's going to go, well, I've been to the wall and it's not there. Or I've been to the right, wall and exactly. it is in fact big and beautiful.
Yeah. If he announced that the wall was complete and finished and working, that's what his base would say.
That's right.
They could go down and see there's no wall mm-hmm. and they'd still insist that the wall was working.
Right. Right. Well, and it's the same goes with this apparent attack mm-hmm. by the Taliban that occurred right around the same time that he was willing to invite them to Camp David. Oh, and then just as he's willing to meet with Iran without preconditions, oh, suddenly there's this attack in this Saudi oil field, possibly leading us to World War III. I know you love those discussions. but again, he cites as a reason for defending the Saudis that they pay cash and they're buying all of our military equipment and they're handing us big stacks of cash, or as Donald Trump says, cash. Okay, so there's this IRS whistleblower, first of all. This is the first bit of news that we got as far as people just rebelling inside the executive branch. Mm-hmm. They're claiming that Donald Trump is somehow interfering with the audit process, the mandatory audit process for Trump and Pence's tax returns. Mm-hmm. That's what, I mean, it's law.
But of course they are.
Yeah, right. Well, it's a law that the IRS has to audit the president's and the vice president's mm-hmm. taxes while they're in office. That's just how it goes. And Trump is naturally interfering with that. And now we have a guy going to Richie Neal and the Ways and Means Committee saying, this is what Trump is doing. And just, again, this would be a massive story.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, this would be blowing. I mean, Rachel Maddow was talking about last night, if any one of these stories had happened under Barack Obama, Fox News Channel would be in four-alarm fire mode. I mean, they would be screaming, leaning on every panic button, sirens, alerts, graphic packages, and all kinds of shit directed at Barack Obama and all of his terrible, terrible criminality. Of course, they never had that chance, so they had to make up stuff. But if this had happened, I can't even imagine the reaction from Fox News Channel. I mean, AM talk radio, of course, would just be indiscriminate screaming.
Yes, of course.
Right?
And I mean, we could say this about every single thing Trump does.
Exactly. Well, then this next thing is potentially even worse. I want to read some of the this press release issued by Adam Schiff. Because this is a big fucking deal. I mean, just a monumental deal. And as we're all talking about Sean Spicer on Dancing with the Stars, this is happening right under our noses. And by the way, we are going to talk about Sean Spicer and Dancing with the Stars. I thought we'd get to this first. So a month ago, a whistleblower within the intelligence community lawfully filed a complaint regarding a serious or flagrant problem, abuse, violation of law, or deficiency within the responsibility or authority of the Director of National Intelligence. And by the way, isn't it interesting that within maybe a month or so of this story actually breaking, we've had a turnover in the Director of National Intelligence.
Right.
Dan Coats has left, and now we've got one of Donald Trump's many acting mm-hmm. DNIs, or one of his many acting officials, who he can control because they're handpicked. Mm-hmm. He's circumventing the order of succession, too. So obviously, you can't help to, again, go to possible cover-up mm-hmm. here that Donald Trump knew that this was going on and therefore replaced the DNI so that Dan Coats wouldn't hand over these documents. Anyway, so the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community found that complaint not only credible, but urgent. More than 10 days since the director was obligated to transmit the complaint to the intelligence committees, the committee has still not received the disclosure from the director in violation of the law. A Director of National Intelligence has never prevented a properly submitted whistleblower complaint that the ICIG, that's the Intelligence Community Inspector General, determined to be credible and urgent from being provided to the Congressional Intelligence Committees. Never. This raises serious concerns about whether the White House, Department of Justice, or other executive branch officials are trying to prevent a legitimate whistleblower complaint from reaching its intended recipient, the Congress, in order to cover up serious misconduct. After Watergate exposed significant intelligence abuses, a critical bargain was struck in exchange for the intelligence community's willingness to reveal closely guarded national security secrets. The congressional intelligence committees and leadership promised to handle that information responsibly. It was also of vital importance that the intelligence officials have a lawful and protected means of bringing misconduct to the attention of Congress and the public. By withholding a credible whistleblower complaint that potentially deals with executive branch wrongdoing, the DNI is in violation of the applicable statute and has made itself a party to the concealment of potentially serious misconduct. Again, that is basically, you better watch your step, acting DNI, because this is obstruction of justice. That is exactly what Adam Schiff, I think, is saying here. And I think this also speaks to the counterintelligence investigation that's going on. There is something happening with Donald. Obviously, this is all linked up. And again, we can only speculate at this point, but I think it's fairly obvious that this is all linked up with the fact that Donald Trump is obviously compromised by Russia and is acting on their behalf rather than, you know, the interests of the United States and our national security. So that's why there's some sort of bizarre cover up happening inside the DNI's office. And, you know, I hope at some point we find out soon what both of these things are. But I imagine there's going to be a long investigatory process to determine whether or not, you know, what these whistleblowers are saying is true. Mm-hmm. But it looks like, based on the inspector general of the intelligence community, that what they're saying is true. Because the inspector general found the accusations by this whistleblower, the IC whistleblower, to be quite credible.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of reminds me of the Brett Kavanaugh situation.
Yeah.
You know, back in last year, there were allegations that came up and we had this whole week for the FBI to do a thorough investigation on these allegations. And, you know, what do you know? We find out now that that investigation was bullshit. And so when I think about this thing, what you're talking about, I feel like I have no faith. Maybe in a year from now or 2 years from now, we might find out, oh, this was actually happening. But it's like too late. It's too late because Brett Kavanaugh is sitting on the Supreme Court. And, you know, I mean, I think he needs to be impeached, but he's not going to be impeached, at least not right now. And frankly, I don't necessarily want him to be impeached with Donald Trump as president, because he's just going to be replaced by another, you know, right-wing extremist type.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know what to think outside of from everything that you're talking about and what's in the news as far as this guy, this whistleblower and then the DNI. I don't think we're going to find anything out. And then what's going to be done about it? We have Republicans who aren't doing anything about it.
Yeah. Well, it's all being lumped into.
You talked about obstruction of justice. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Then what?
Well, we'll ask Doug. Doug Collins, what do you
the
think?
The old rules are the new rules, the new rules are the old rules. These rules over here.
Yeah, but it's like, I have no faith that anything's going to be done about any of this. Sure, the president is obstructing justice. Okay, well, we've heard that for 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah.
However long he's fucking been in office.
To me, if there's any one thing, I mean, if we had to choose among the entire fire hose of bullshit, if we had to choose one thing that was probably the most dire in terms of American national security.
Well, yeah.
It is the fact that the president is compromised by Russia and absolutely is compromised by Russia. And this is something that was not covered in the Mueller report, obviously. Mm-hmm. This is that separate counterintelligence investigation that has been shrouded in mystery. We know very little about the extent of that, but now this increases the stakes, right? This is something going on where the president is continuing to cover up, continuing to obstruct, but not necessarily obstructing the Mueller investigation. Now he's just covering his tracks. He's just running around saying, okay, you know what? We can't have this bit of information getting out ever, so don't say a goddamn thing. And so the acting DNI is keeping all of this whistleblower information to himself. So again, this is, there's so many things that are connected to this, but one of the main things is that this is a surefire sign, just another of 1,000 examples of Donald Trump just subverting the Constitution, subverting institutions, and just making them all extensions of him rather than doing the work of the American people. And in this case, he's got an acting D&I in there. I don't think he ever intends to seriously replace the director of that show.
Or everybody's acting now.
Yeah, at the very least, he's dragging his feet on this crap because, well, if he gets a little bit of window of time in which he can get someone who's loyal in there to do all of his bidding, then that's enough time. Mm-hmm. I want to say that he has appointed a replacement for Dan Coats, although I'm not 100% sure on that. Hmm. But the acting guy is Joseph McGuire right now. And Joseph McGuire clearly doing all of Trump's bidding. Did you see any clips of Trump's rally last night?
A little bit. And when he was talking about all the Hispanics.
Yeah. Well, he didn't say this.
Mom, I want a vape.
He wasn't talking about that. But he asked someone, and I'm not sure exactly who it was, but someone in the crowd, whether they like the country or whether they like Hispanics more. Mm-hmm. Who do you like more, the country or Hispanics? Well, Hispanics are part of the country.
I know.
Here's Trump.
Nobody loves the Hispanics.
Oh, nobody. No.
Nobody loves the Hispanics more than Trump.
He suddenly sounded like Yukon Cornelius there. Land ho! Oh, nothing.
Yeah. Nobody loves the Hispanics more. What do you like more, the country or the Hispanics? He says the country. I don't know.
How could that possibly be true?
What do people who are Mexican or who are Spanish or what do they think about this? What do the Hispanics think?
It's just screwy.
What are the Latinx? Let me just ask you something. Is Latinx new?
Isn't it a catch-all term? That
it is. I don't want to be like wrong about it and politically incorrect about it, but it feels funny to me because I've never said it before, so I feel like I'm saying it wrong.
Yeah, let me see if I can look it up here.
I think
it's a gender-neutral neologism.
But it's like it's something that I feel like. I want to use it right, or I feel like I don't want to mess it up.
Yeah, I think you could say Latinx. That's how I read it.
It's Latinx.
It's Latinx.
Yes.
Okay.
I've heard it, Latinx.
Instead of saying Latinos and Latinas,
I'm hearing Latinx more. So I'm just wondering if somehow Hispanics is...
Well, I was in the impression that Latina suggests Central American.
Oh, I see.
And Hispanic suggests non-Central American people of Spanish origin.
Gotcha.
So, like, people from Cuba are often referenced as Hispanic, generally.
What about people from Mexico?
People from Mexico would be Latinx.
Okay.
Or Latinos, Latinas. So I think that's the rule. I'm pretty sure on that. I could be horribly wrong. I don't know. I'm sure we'll be corrected in the comments.
Someone can let us know.
So, okay, let's talk about one of my favorite things in the world. One of the best new products to come out in recent memory, and you've tried it too. I'm talking about Plexiderm. In fact, I keep telling the story that when we first got our Plexiderm here, we both had to take the test. We both had to try it and say, oh, yeah, prove it. Prove you can reduce all of these wrinkles and eye bags in just a matter of minutes. Prove. And of course, we both got some and we tested it out and it worked. It's kind of amazing. And one of the more amazing things about it is that it happens in just a matter of minutes, because usually you put on some of these face creams and lotions and things like that, and you have to enter into like a regimen for a matter of months, if not longer, until you maybe will see results kind of possibly, although... it's not guaranteed. Well, everything that's suggested with Plexiderm, everything that claims to be, is 100% true. And again, I'm not talking about days or weeks to work. Plexiderm is a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates under eye bags and wrinkles in just a few minutes. It's like magic. I mean, did you hear that? In just minutes. The science behind Plexiderm is incredible, with clinical studies to back it up. If you look older and tired because of crow's feet, wrinkles, or under eye bags, you can look younger in just minutes with Plexiderm. See for yourself. Watch a real video with real people and see how fast crow's feet, wrinkles, and under eye bags vanish. Those results are backed up by Plexiderm's 30-day satisfaction guarantee. Go to tryplexiderm.com and use the coupon code SEXYLIBERAL. Write this down and bookmark that URL. Tryplexiderm.com, coupon code SEXYLIBERAL for my discount. That's tryplexiderm.com. Use the code SEXYLIBERAL or call 1-800-685-1292 and mention SEXYLIBERAL. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
guys, this is Mike Farley Band. Pay your dues from where we stand. Link in the description. I got to mention this again. I mentioned this on the after party on Friday on our Patreon page that Mike Farley's also a music manager in addition to being a rockin' badass. Mike Farley has been sending me a lot of the bands that you hear on this show now. He's been sending me a lot of his clients. And, God, the list is immense. Jeremy Dion, Bob Bradshaw, just a lot of well-known strangers, just huge number of amazing independent recording artists, and we get them all right here. So thank you also to everyone who's been submitting to bobseska.com/music. Please keep doing so. We need more music. More music! So, so there's that. All right. So moving along here on the show today, Kimberly Johnson's here, by the way. Patreon.com/startmeup.
And also slash Kimberly A. Johnson.
There you go. That's your writing page, yes. Right? So you've got a page for your podcasting, and then you got a page for your writing. Do you ever put some of your podcasts on your writing page and writing page on your podcast?
Occasionally, but it seems like I think the people who like to just read just want to read.
Yeah.
I don't usually put my articles on my podcast page, so I've never tried that.
Well, okay, so moving along here, a federal appeals court revived a previously dismissed lawsuit that accused Trump of violating the Constitution's emoluments clause. This is fantastic news again. I think we had this late last week on the after party, but it bears repeating. The lawsuit claims that Trump's vast, complicated, and secret business arrangements violate the emoluments clause, which bars presidents from accepting gifts from foreign governments without the permission of Congress. Mm-hmm. You know, this... This brings us to the Turnberry story, just real quick. I wanted to mention that just briefly, because there have been some stories that have come out showing that occasionally the Air Force did use Turnberry under Barack Obama. But here's the massive... I mean, that's going to be the thing that the Republicans and Trumpers use.
Yes, that's the only thing they're going
to say. Yeah. Well, of course, that doesn't make any goddamn difference. And the reason being is because there was no requirement for the Air Force personnel to then deplane and drive 30 miles to Trump Turnberry from that goddamn airport. And that's what they're doing. They're staying overnight. They're being, apparently, there was a story today that they're being showered with gifts as they go there.
Here's a MAGA hat.
Right. Oh, here's some Trump vodka and a Trump steak from Sharper Image.
Hurry up and eat it before it spoils.
Yummy, yummy. But yeah, so they're going there. Their per diem doesn't cover a lot of the additional expenses. So they can't eat other than what they're given. I guess if they're given a Trump steak, they can... microwave it. I don't know they have by way of in-room amenities at the Trump Turnberry Resort, but I can't imagine they're all that great.
I'm sure, it's very, very. I can't talk like him. They posh. Should,
yeah, I mean, if
I
anything,
the Trump thing.
If anything, they can snack on the bed bugs.
Yeah,
there's that. Those are delicious,
nice and crunchy.
Yeah, but I, you know, again, this is all stuff that's just so obvious, and sometimes it feels to me as if we're just continuously restating the obvious. But here's the thing. I feel like the Democrats running for president right now in particular, obviously this doesn't extend necessarily to people like Adam Schiff or Jerry Nadler, the Democrats on the Hill. I'm talking about the Democrats running for president. I feel like they need to be attacking Trump more forcefully. Mm-hmm. I think they need to spend more time at this point. And I don't know where you land on this, but I feel like, okay, we've got all of their technocratic plans for, you know, their legislative agenda. We've got all of that lined up. We kind of know where all of these candidates stand on the various issues and what they intend to do about those issues. So now I feel like they need to really amplify what we've been observing, what we've been talking about all day now, you know, the fire hose of news, everything that is surrounding Trump, circulating around Trump, needs to be clarified in a way by these candidates. They need to be discussed, and Trump needs to be attacked in a way that is both descriptive, but brief and catchy. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I can think of is that they just start branding all of the things with Trump's name.
Right.
Trump bigotry, Trump prison camps, Trump criminality, Trump, you know, emoluments violation, just every last thing, Trump treason. Just do the whole list. You know, you can start with broad stroke things and narrow them down a little bit more. Trump misogyny, Trump racism. It's all just waiting. It's all there for the picking. And I think maybe the only thing that's holding everyone back is this kind of contrarian notion that, oh, we don't want to be seen as just being anti-Trump. We want to make sure the American people know we have ideas. But I, you know what? At this point, I feel like we all know. We all know what their ideas are. Quite frankly, this is the time right now to be appealing to Democrats. And what better way to appeal to Democratic voters in a Democratic primary than to just be nailing Donald Trump? And
yeah, well, I mean, this kind of allows me to plug my interview last week with Tim Wise, because Tim basically, and I'm going to speak specifically about his racism and his white supremacy, because Tim Wise is an anti-racism expert. But basically, you know, he was involved in two campaigns that defeated David Duke. And pardon me, I did talk about this on the after party, so I'm going to repeat just a little.
Okay.
But anyway, when he ran, I don't remember the day. I think it was 90 and 91. So I think when Duke ran,
Duke
ran for Senate in Louisiana in 90, Wise was on the campaign against him, you know, or working on the campaign against Duke.
Yeah.
Right. So, Democrats were afraid to just paint him as a racist. They did talk about his racism, but they were afraid to make that the gist of their campaign.
And the Democratic pea shyness is just driving me nuts.
So what they did was kind of a combination of talking about his racism, but then also talking about his policy. And Wise basically said that was a mistake because A, it was confusing, and B, it kind of made his normalized him by talking about his policy. The following year, when David Duke ran for governor, Wise and the guy that he was working with had the opportunity to really go and attack him on the danger of him. Like, what will this mean for people in the community? Yeah. How is this going? How is his racism going to affect our lives? And they really focused on that. And okay, they both times Duke was defeated. But the difference was the second time he was defeated, it was by much higher margins. And it was also by, you know, like there were more white people who showed up to vote against him when they were aware of the danger of white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So it was a higher margin of white people that voted against him the second time around and a higher margin of voters, period.
Yeah.
And so I agree with you that, you know, there are many things that we can focus on, not just his white supremacy and racism. But I think that if we just took a hold of that, and, you know, and the thing is I think it is like right now we're in the primary. So I do believe that the Democrats, and I think they're timid, and I think that they need to get, you know, stronger. But I think what they might be thinking is that, all right, in order to win the primary, we have to sell the voters of our policies. And then once we hit the general, I don't know. I'm hoping maybe that they're thinking that, okay, now we're going to go after Trump. I mean, I've seen all of them do it. It's just that they need to do it more.
I think it's mainly because they're still overly concerned and dancing on eggshells around the white male diner crowd in suburban
Ohio.
Yeah,
I'm fucking sick of it. I'm over it. Yeah. It's like, you know, why are we so timid as a group, as a party? I mean, I get, you know, there's the idea of being centrist, right? And to me, and I can't speak to other people, I can't speak for Joe Biden, but what to me a centrist means is that I feel that I'm very, very, very progressive. Last night, Chris Matthews was talking about, you know, Democrats who identify as liberal. And I think it used to be half, or it's half now, and it was, you know, a quarter several years ago, whatever it is. But okay, so there are more that I identify as liberal. But I think the idea is like, I'm very, very progressive. I was voted for Bernie in the primary in 2016. And Elizabeth Warren is my number one choice right now because I'm a very progressive person. But I also realize that, you know, I wouldn't call myself far left because I think the far left has become kind of insane. But, I'm very far left when it comes to policy. I would be happy to have Medicare for all, although I would prefer it to come in a public option first so we can slow roll it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, all the stuff, climate, all of it. I'm very, very progressive. But I do get that we have to work with people who don't see the same, you know, see the things the same way we do.
Yeah, it's big tent Democratic
politics. Right, so we take our goal. control of Medicare for all.
Yeah.
And we compromise by saying we start with a public option. So here I am, very progressive, yet I will act as a centrist or be understanding that we can't rush to get everything we want all of a sudden.
But there's also a way, I think, and not getting too deep in the weeds of healthcare policy right here, but I think there's also a way to package the public option as Medicare for all.
Right, yeah. And it is, actually.
That's, of course, why the public option was originally proposed back in 2009 as a means toward getting to some sort of Medicare for all single-payer plan.
Yeah.
And obviously, the Affordable Care Act was also structured to build upon that, to be, you know, expanded. And I think that's what Joe Biden and particularly Pete Buttigieg both want to do. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that we're both, you and I are both, kind of leaning toward Elizabeth Warren. You're leaning more toward Elizabeth Warren than I am.
I'm all in for Warren. I mean, of course she's not going to be perfect, but we have criticisms.
And we disagree with her healthcare plan.
Well, let me put it to you this way.
Or part of it, at least.
I just disagree. I have an issue with and disagree. I disagree with selling it as let's get rid of all insurance and just move to that.
Yeah.
And it's never going to happen anyway, because Congress would have to vote on it. So what I see is her saying, here's my view of what I want. Mm-hmm. I want Medicare for all.
Yep.
And here's what I need to compromise on when I'm elected is the public option. She's not saying that. I wish she would say that, because that clarity might calm down people who think she's going to walk in there with some magic wand and erase insurance companies. It's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. And then the other thing that I just wish that she would do is explain Medicare for all to people like Chris Matthews when they pound her about taxes. And I did an open thread to her, didn't get that much attention, but I hope she read it, because all I asked her to do was just explain it in the same way she described how we would pay for universal child care, which it's 2 cents. It was, okay, for someone who makes $50 million, every dollar after $50 million, we tax them an extra 2 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Yes, of course it's going to make a difference when you're talking about big money, but you've got $50 million a fucking year.
Yeah, are you sure that 50 millionaires will be able to, or
right,
millionaires who are earning at least $50 million are going to worry about a 2% tax increase?
Right.
I don't think so.
I wish that she would be very, because she, it seems that she's shying away from explaining the fact that yes, your taxes will go up, but they will not go up as much as what you're now paying for premiums, and also for, you know, co-pays for certain kinds of medications and things like that. So you will pay more in taxes, but you will not have a premium. And I would like for her to explain how, because this it happens in Europe, it happens in France. All, you know, there's all these countries who are experiencing, you know, socialized medicine. And of course, the citizens are taxed more.
Yeah.
It's not like it's costing them. I think Americans pay more in premiums than they're paying in taxes. And that's the point.
Yeah.
And I wish that she would do numbers like she did numbers with the 2 cents over, because people understood that and they're okay with it.
Well, here's some numbers. Here's some numbers that Elizabeth Warren could start citing. And by the way, I want to make sure I'm totally clear on this. I wrote an article for Salon about all of this stuff, about how the Democrats need to seize the initiative, start attacking Trump directly, especially on his strengths, or his one strength, which is the economy. And it's not even a real strength. But regardless, I do believe that they all need to do this. Certainly, Kamala Harris was out front attacking Trump during the debate.
She was really good.
I thought Beto O'Rourke stood out as taking a hardline approach when it comes to guns. And in fact, both of these approaches by both Harris and O'Rourke in that debate were both not all that risky in the grand scheme, given that, you know, 90% of American voters support expanded background checks. 67% of American voters support banning assault weapons. This is a no-brainer thing that shouldn't be a risky move, but for the fact that the Democratic Party is terrified of those white trucker cap wearing guys in the diners in suburban Green Bay or whatever. The Chris Matthews fever dream is what I'm talking about. Those guys in the diners. He's always talking about the guys in the diners. They're so worried about that. But what they can really start to do now, and I think this is pretty much mandatory, and I'd like to see a little bit of this, is attacking Donald Trump on his big quote-unquote strength, which is the economy.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, that's going to affect more people viscerally, just because, you know, money rules all.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you've got a couple of numbers. You were talking about numbers a second ago. Got a couple of numbers here that are absolutely salient when it comes to attacking Donald Trump. You have to talk about the fact that the CEO president, the guy who is tasked with allegedly making a profit for America. I mean, anyone who was following Donald Trump's career knows he's incapable of making a profit for anybody, including himself. But, you know, that's how he was framed, right? That's how all of his supporters were. Oh, let's try a businessman, a CEO president who can get shit done in Washington because he's going to run the government like a business. Well, the first task of any CEO is profitability for his shareholders, right? That's the main goal of any CEO who's got a golden parachute and a lot of money. So they step into that role as CEO, and they're supposed to do whatever they can, step over bodies if they have to earn a massive profit. Well, Donald Trump has done the opposite of earning a profit. And in fact, his agenda was to roll back the Obama legacy, well, he's done a fine job because he's actually rolled back all of Barack Obama's deficit reduction for 8 years. I mean, the deficit for fiscal year 2009, which was money that was spent and authorized by George W. Bush in 2008. That's how the fiscal calendar starts in October. And so October 2008, George Bush authorizes more spending. That creates a $1.4 trillion deficit in 2009. Mm-hmm. That was dropped down to $584 billion. By the end of Obama's two terms. So that's nearly $1 trillion in deficit reduction. In fact, at one point, the deficit was even lower, making it, I would say, right around that $1 trillion deficit reduction mark. I think it was in the $400 billion, somewhere around there at one point. But now, in Donald Trump's first 34 months, he has increased the deficit back to nearly $1.1 trillion. And in fact, the CBO had projected that the deficit wasn't going to get to $1.1 trillion until the end of next year. But we're already in it. It's already been racked up, and we're not even through 2019 yet. So the end of 2020 is going to be a fucking mess in terms of the deficit. Once again, another Republican president who can't cut the goddamn deficit. And we've had the two most recent Democratic presidents have both reduced the deficit significantly. Bill Clinton arriving at a surplus, for God's sake. And in fact, a surplus that was so significant, we would have eliminated the national debt by 2015. Oh my God. Had we kept that surplus rolling.
I just want to cry now.
I mean, it's so tantalizing, the what ifs, right?
Right.
Instead, George W. Bush is just like, spend, yay, spending. And meanwhile, Barack Obama signs into law the PAYGO Act, which requires that Congress account for every dollar that's spent, but with either spending cuts or tax hikes. And of course, Mitch McConnell has ignored that rule. Meanwhile, according to Moody's analytics, Trump's tariffs have lost 300,000 jobs in the United States so far. Projected to be 450,000 by the end of this year, projected to be 900,000 by the end of 2020, thanks to Donald Trump's trade war of choice. So these are all areas. And of course, we've got a recession on the horizon, a destabilized Dow, where based on whether Donald Trump tweets to China in a single day,
China,
the Dow could go up, it could go down. Who knows? Donald Trump basically controls the stock market now with his tweets. Yeah. Uh-huh. How terrifying is that? So Democrats need to start nailing him on this. Go at him at his strongest point.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, they're going to start to see results because people are going to be shaking.
Somebody call Tom Perez.
That's exactly right. But, you know, going back to healthcare, I'm glad we started talking about that because I want to clarify something from the debate last week. The Democratic debate, you know, and again, everyone knows who listens to this show. Everyone knows where I stand on Joe Biden. I don't need to go through the reasons why I'm not necessarily a Joe Biden supporter. While I'll vote for him, obviously, in the general election, I'll do whatever I can to see that he wins if he becomes the nominee. But I'm not a huge fan. But he was exactly right. Julian Castro was exactly wrong. when it came to the public option and the buy-in. And it's really frustrating to see when the fanboys come out. And I didn't know that Julian Castro has fanboys. I mean, I was kind of one of his fanboys. I thought his behavior toward Joe Biden, though, in that debate was way out of character. It was jarring and it was unnecessary. And I don't think he should have done it. I think he ruined a lot of his chances for the future.
I don't know that he's ruined a lot of chances for the
future. Well, he's diminished his chances.
I think that it was cringeworthy, but I think that the bigger point that is brought up by so many people who are African-American, and like Zerlino Maxwell and many different black pundits, journalists, they're talking about Joe's answer on reparations, on black people in general. Mm-hmm. And frankly, again, I said this on the after party, but I can only describe this as, you know, it kind of went over my head for two reasons. Number one, while this debate was happening, I was, you know, on my computer and I was typing and I was like half listening to what Joe Biden was answering and typing something. And I heard him say, play records, say more words. And I remember thinking, what the fuck is he talking about? And I hadn't really listened to his answer. And then, you know, what I see the following day are plenty of African-American pundits who are very upset because what he suggested was that black people don't know how to parent, that they get confused. And so it's one thing, it reminded me of Sarah Palin. When Sarah Palin would say something, you understood what she was saying. But then when you read it, it was like this rambling, crazy mush. Well, it was kind of the opposite with Biden. It was like,
Are you sure?
A big darn deal.
It was like when I mean, granted, I wasn't paying 100% to what he was saying. Mm-hmm. But then when I read what he said, I could see how offensive it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, for anybody out there who wants to defend, say he's not a racist, go tell a black person that. It's not that I think he's a racist, that he's this horrible man and hates black people. Of course not. I think he doesn't understand the subject in a way that he needs to understand it as president, because he offended and upset many, many, many black people. And I understand why. So when I look in terms of what Julian Castro did, yes, I think that it was a low blow. It was a cheap shot. And unfortunately for me, because I was also one of his fans and I compared him to, you know, Obama and everything. And Obama had a few cheap shots. He took a cheap shot at Hillary Clinton by calling her Annie Oakley.
It's a terrible reference, by the way. Like, who the fuck knows who Annie Oakley is,
right?
Anyway?
But I mean, the idea is that he, you know, he became president and he made her Secretary of State. So I am not, you know, I was disappointed in what Julian said, but I think that he has an opportunity. You know, what I saw happened was cringeworthy, but then he stopped. Everybody came down on him for that. Nobody liked it. And yeah, it was evident immediately. And I think he got it. And then he shut up. Well, and he probably resents doing it. But I think that is much smaller than, you know, and I wish I could remember. I tweeted this out yesterday and I'm going to try to find it because I can't remember his name, but he was basically, it was a black guy and he said, you know, and he's a writer and he said something like this is the week where black people who have been paying attention are telling black people who haven't been paying attention why Biden is not the best choice. And I really do think that Biden is the one who fucked up on the debate much more than Castro. So there's my two cents.
Well, okay. Well, that may be the case, but in the context of the back and forth between Biden and Castro, the fact is that Biden didn't say you had to buy in to
the public option. Up. He screwed up.
Yeah. And then Castro, you just said that. You just said 2 minutes ago. You just said 2 minutes ago that they would have to buy in. And he didn't say they would have to buy in. Joe Biden said, if you want Medicare, the public option is called the public option because it is optional. Yeah. Right.
Well, and
there is no mandatory buy-in of the public option. Under Joe Biden's plan, you can buy the public option if you want it, right, which I would recommend, or you can buy insurance through a private insurer, or you can go without insurance if you want to, unless he reestablishes the mandate. And even then, you can go without insurance. You just have to pay a tax penalty. But I mean, the fact is that you don't have to buy in, and Joe Biden didn't say that you had to buy in by the very nature of it being a public option. Right.
And the fact
there's
that
no mandatory buy-in.
The fact that it was so cringeworthy was because Julian Castro was turning this into he is losing his memory and mind right as we're, you know,
yes,
watching
was,
his mind deteriorate again, in front of our eyes. Yeah. So I think that was a very low blow. And I think it hurt him, but honestly, I don't think it's diminishing his chances moving forward. I think that if he leaves this alone, never does it again, and goes on to do, you know, lots of great things, I think this is going to be something that it could be put behind him. And just like with the Pocahontas thing,
yeah,
you know, with Elizabeth Warren trying, I mean, I think it's worse what he did because he was trying to paint Joe Biden as this decrepit old man who's losing his memory. But I do think that's a fear, a legitimate fear that a lot of voters have about him. Not that he's necessarily losing his memory, but is he fit, you know, it's not necessarily about age, because there are other candidates who are, you know, closer to his age. They're not behaving in the same way. So it's like there's this worry. Is he going to be okay to handle this? And I think Julian was trying to point that out. And I think he thought he was going to get all kinds of applause. And instead he was met with, like, ugh, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, right now there was an article, and I didn't read exactly, I think what he was trying to say, Joe Biden, he was questioning Elizabeth Warren's electability. And I think it's because she's really struggling with black voters. And so, okay, there's a valid point. But here we have the man in the lead questioning a woman's electability very early on, which is really pissing me off.
Well, there are a lot of question marks when it comes to Joe Biden. I think they're all quite obvious. I just think the Democrats need to stop worrying about the diner crowd and start campaigning against Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to have a dual purpose of weakening Donald Trump, I mean, in the long run, and while also, you know, drumming up more enthusiasm on the Democratic side. I think people are rightfully concerned that Donald Trump is going to be reelected, and the Democrats need to stop, you know, confronting that crisis, the possibility that Donald Trump is going to be reelected, by ignoring Donald Trump, by being weak when it comes to attacking this guy who's got more things to attack than all the rest of the presidents combined.
Well, you know, you said going back to 2018, I think 2018 Democrats did a good job of, you know, showing their dreams, their goals, whatever, and their policies and all of that, talking about Main Street issues as well as attacking Trump. Maybe what's happening, and I don't know, but I know that people who voted in 2018, you know, based their vote on Trump, whether it was for or against, mostly against.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe Democrats are thinking, all right, well, the public's already aware of how much he's damaging everything, and so we should just be focusing on, you know, our policies or whatever, at least during the primary. But again, I hope that if they're not going to get their shit together and really go after him, because, and they should also look at the reaction Kamala Harris got the other night when she did speak directly to him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and she pounded his ass on television, and everyone fucking exploded with, like, yes. And just like when Beto was, you know, firm on the gun issue, whether it was right after El Paso or on the debate stage, he got a lot of love from everybody. So Democrats should be listening and paying attention to that kind of reaction that they're getting.
Well, the Democrats are spending too much time listening to Chris Matthews and Joe Scarborough.
Yes.
He just spent a little more time listening to Rachel Maddow, I think. I think that's the key. All right.
We're gonna take
Kimberly A. Johnson. We're going to take one last break here. I'm going to check in to see if anything's happening with the Corey Lewandowski testimony, but we'll be back with more show right after these words.
Hey, dude, being at the racetrack is a blast. High five.
Whoa, man, you can put your arm down now.
What, you gonna leave me hanging? Come on, bring it in for a hug.
That's okay, man, we're cool.
Why, what's the matter? We're all buds, man.
Well, I hate to tell you, but I think you need to take a pit stop.
What? I'm not driving a race car, man.
No, pit stop. It's, an all-natural deodorant that'll keep your pits from, being the pits.
Oh no, my pits are the pits?
Hey, don't worry, man. Luckily, my pals over at Bubble Genius have you covered. They've created all natural stuff to help with summer stank. Everything from pit stop deodorant to cooling facial mist to talc-free body powders that leave you soft, not sweaty.
Hey, cool!
You said it. Bubble Genius keeps you cool all summer long.
BubbleGenius.com!
Bob Seska!
This is Terry Morris. The song is called Best Now from her Undercover EP. Link in the description. I love this album. Just five or six songs, I think, but they're all great. And this is my fave among all of them, Best Now. Okay, so this just in, Corey Lewandowski, while testifying, probably had an assistant do this or something, but just tweeted... Again, this is Corey Lewandowski, who's in the House Judiciary Committee hearing room right now, testifying. He tweets, new website just launched to help a potential Senate run. Sign up now, standwithcorey.com. Oh, go fuck yourself. Oh, seriously.
Yeah, they all want to run. I mean, who was it? Rick Wilson. I think Rick Wilson said that Donald Jr. is going to run in 2024 and he'll win.
We need to exile them from the public conversation.
Yeah.
These people are villains. They have corrupted the United States government. They have corrupted our way of doing things here. They have corrupted the Constitution. They have bastardized our institutions. And now they expect us to give them more power. I mean, even Sean Spicer participating in Dancing with the Stars is a fucking atrocity.
Oh, my God, I know.
I mean, in addition to the atrocity that was his wardrobe, apparently.
Yes.
In last night's show. I'm hoping that someone green screens that shirt where they, you know, they superimpose something onto the green of the shirt. Yeah. It's just about the right color for green screening. And I was thinking maybe, you know, just like kids in cages. Put that on there.
Yeah.
You know, because...
Well, yeah.
What we need in the United States more than anything else, apparently, are more dancing clowns for our bread and circuses.
Well, the thing that's so fucking frustrating about this is in 2017, everybody was so upset when Sean Spicer was lying to us every single day.
Yep.
When he was behaving like an indignant, arrogant little fucker, and he was standing up there and telling lies about crowd sizes and everything else, and we're all upset. And this was at the start of the resistance, right? It was like the day after. I think it was the day after the Women's March was the first press conference. And it was like, oh my God. I think that there was this hope that when Trump won, that he would pivot to presidential.
Yeah.
And this was our first indication. Sean Spicer was our first indication that that's not ever going to happen.
No, never.
And so the resistance is formed and we're upset. And now we're all accepting him. And I don't mean all. I'm not. You're not. But the United States ABC is accepting him as somebody that we can cheer on while he's dancing. And I'm so sickened by this because it's, I mean, where are we going? You know, I mean, it's like, what next? Is it going to be fucking Cosby?
There is an appetite in this country to watch the freak show. And we pay lots of money. Studios, networks pay lots of money to put on the freak show. And Dancing with the Stars is a bit of a freak show. And Sean Spicer is the main freak this time around.
But it's not a freak show to the people who like it. My mom used to watch that show all the time. My grandmother
even
watched
it. My mom loves that show.
Right. And it's like the thing about...
But it's bread and circuses is all it is.
Well, but what it is, prior to Sean Spicer going on that show, you know, it was just something where it was fun. And like, I know Tom Bergeron was against getting him on because he called him a political lightning rod, which was a nice way to say he was lying to everybody every day. But, you know, I mean, it was just a fun show with dancing. Yeah. And I like watching dancing. It was never a show that I watched all the time. I watched it with my mom occasionally, or, you know, maybe if I was just bored and there was nothing else on, I would watch it because I do enjoy watching dancing. So the show in and of itself was not a freak show, but it has now turned into one because there, you know, it's like who's going to come on next? Kellyanne Conway? We're going to start accepting these people who have been damaging the country as, oh, fun, you know, fun celebrity types on the dancing show. I'm beyond angry. It seems almost like nothing, right? Because he's in the silly, dumbass fucking green shirt. But it is something. It's something very big. It's us normalizing, like, basically traitors.
I know. And we've already had, was it Rick Perry was on Dancing with the Stars one time? It's confounding to me where it's just like, oh.
So I guess the freak show started when he was on.
Yeah, well, you know, again, it's harmless entertainment, you know, just generally speaking.
Right.
But you put a villain on like Sean Spicer, someone who stood in front of the American people, looked into cameras and lied to everybody on a daily basis.
With his angry face. Like, how dare you question me?
But now this person has a chance at redemption by saying, hey, look, well, that was all bullshit because here I am dancing and having fun and wearing this garish shirt that needs to be green screened by someone.
Everybody in the Trump administration should be shunned by all entertainment media. I can't say news media because they were part of the news. And so I don't think they should be ignored or shunned, particularly depending on, I don't think they should be celebrated. But I think all media, anything having to do with just strictly entertainment, all of those people should be shunned.
Mm-hmm. Well, by the way, we have some a little bit of breaking news here. Apparently, Corey Lewandowski, I'm just seeing this coming up on Twitter. It says here from the Center for American Progress, Lewandowski confirms the Mueller report's account on Trump's obstruction of justice. And they have a video here. So let's watch this video. It's 37 seconds long. We'll just check this out.
It says, I know that I recused myself from certain things having to do with specific areas, but our POTUS is being treated very unfairly.
Congressman
that's what he
Hank
told
Johnson,
you to write down, and that's what you wrote down. And I'll continue. He said, he shouldn't have a special prosecutor counsel because he hasn't done anything wrong. Now, that's what he wanted you to deliver to Attorney General Jeff Sessions, correct?
I believe that's an accurate representation.
And he wanted you to deliver it to Jeff so that Jeff could say it to the people, right?
I believe so.
Oh, there you go. I guess that's part of the one of the many counts of obstruction from the Mueller report, and Lewandowski confirming it right there. So I guess he is saying something other than just going.
You want him.
So that's a little better. I guess it's a little better. Let's check in with Doug Collins. What do you think, Congressman Collins?
The old rules are the new rules, the new rules are the old rules. These rules were here all along.
What the fuck was that?
I don't know. It's the marbles, all the marbles in his mouth. So Sean Spicer in Dancing with the Stars is a goddamn travesty. And I'm just hoping, and this goes back to Lewandowski too, running for Senate, and Don Jr. running for president.
Oh my God, I swear to God, if he were to ever be president, I think that's when I would leave the country. No fucking way.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is bad enough. His derpy fucking son, no way.
Donald Trump Jr. shouldn't even be president of the He-Man Woman Haters Club. I mean, he can't even be like a Little Rascals president.
I hate him so much.
The president of a make-believe club on an episode of Little Rascals. He shouldn't even do that.
Right.
Because what's happening is these people are villains and they're being normalized.
That's exactly it. And that's and the thing is that we're allowing it. And, you know, I mean, it's one thing. It's sickening that the media is going to, you know, eat them up, especially entertainment media. But what's worse is that we're all just going along with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's just, I mean, we only have a certain capacity for outrage.
Right.
There's only a certain amount of bandwidth, I think, generally speaking, even among Democratic activists.
Ours is much higher than other countries that are out there marching.
Yeah, but I mean, there are, as we've seen, one time after another, one show after another, one news article after another, one Rachel Maddow episode after another, there are all kinds of things that are just getting lost in the mix, and we just can't focus on all of them. And my ongoing concern, and this is something that most of you who've listened to this show for any length of time know this, my ongoing concern is that it's just going to be weaponized by future politicians, whether it's Democrats or Republicans or whatever, just say, well, you know what, if we just flood the zone with all of the bullshit, if we do a lot of scandals, we can get away with most of them.
Yeah.
And then that can be gamed in a way that the ones that people focus on are bullshit scandals, and the ones that aren't focused on are the real deal. Like, I mean, a lot of the Trump things, you know, where it's, yes, his Twitter feed is outrageous and he says horrible things, and these are things that we should never normalize and we should never downplay. But at the same time, there are things that he's doing that are horrible too. Mm-hmm. And I'm just in this place myself, admittedly, that I it's hard for me to separate the things that he says from the things that he does. Both, right, to me, on some level, are crucial to follow along and to document and to, you know, hold him accountable for, because what the president says is still important. That's important shit that gets entered into the record. That certainly in the case of Space Force and all of the other horrible ideas,
like breaking up hurricanes with nuclear bombs.
Yeah. That's all stuff that can turn into actual policy. So watching his Twitter feed to me is not a waste of time.
No.
It's getting a preview in terms of what horrible news item is going to land on the front page of the Washington Post and New York Times within the next week or so, where that horrible thing that he tweeted about suddenly becomes horrible reality that we then have to deal with legislatively.
Well, puts out threats or he puts out veiled threats to members of Congress, people of color, you know, Ilhan Omar, AOC, and he says these things about her, and then there's, you know, mass shootings. And it's just sickening. It's sickening every day, and it is hard to keep up. Although I just kind of want to take something out of left field and go back a little bit to the Democratic campaigning. Yeah. I would certainly hope that the next debate, they put a good amount of focus on things like the defunding of Planned Parenthood and Title X, because these are and reproductive rights and things like that, and they are not women's issues. They're economic issues and they're human rights issues.
Yep.
Just because they're happening with women doesn't mean it solely affects women. This affects men in many ways. It affects men's pockets. It affects men that if a woman is not allowed to get an abortion, either because a clinic isn't available or because it's outlawed or whatever, well, the man, if there's a man in the picture who also would like to not be a father at that moment, well, you're also affected. Men are affected by this. And even if you're not with a woman, even if you're, you know, a man who's gay or single and has nothing to do with a woman, it's still an economic issue that's going to affect your bottom line. So I would really like for the Democrats to, part of the reason they're not talking about it is because the people who are hosting the debates aren't asking those questions.
Mm-hmm.
But Kirsten Gillibrand found ways to bring it in.
Yeah.
You know, so I put some of the responsibility on the candidates, because the candidates should find ways, just like Kamala Harris found a way to bring up the fact that while they were spending an hour on healthcare, she found a way to point out how Trump is trying to ruin healthcare. So it's not just about how Democrats are going to, make healthcare better. We also have to look at how Trump is trying to ruin it. So anyway, I just had to throw that in there because it's really pissing me off that women are 51% of the population. And most, during all three debates, there was a very brief period of time where these issues were brought up.
Also, we have some more breaking news, and it involves
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
It involves Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Exit polls in the three main TV channels in Israel predict that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has lost the elections with his right-wing bloc not reaching 61 seats majority.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Well, there's hope, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a little bit of hope that we might not have to deal with
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu
anymore. God damn it. Well, got to wrap things up here, but we've got lots more to talk about, and we'll just shove everything over into our post-mortem show.
Can I say something?
Yes, of course you can say lots of things.
I just wanted to send everybody over to my Amazon page, which is Kimberly A. Johnson, Kimberly Ann Johnson, whatever, K-I-M-B-E-R-L-E-Y.
Link in the description.
Yeah, and then to my author page, and then also to my mom, because my mom and I are partners in writing, and her name is Anne Werner. And she's written a bunch of thrillers. Crazy is my favorite. It's about a satanic serial killer who's killing 6-foot blondes in Los Angeles. So anyway, just wanted to plug those in there.
That sounds fun.
It's fun. There's actually some humor in it.
That sounds like a light autumn read.
It is fun. It's a fun, fun read. And it's kind of loosely based on me.
Halloween's right around the corner, too. So it's a great time to pick up.
And we can't forget that I wrote Peyton's Choice about teen abortion, and I'm following it up with...
Peyton's Choice 2?
No, what were we calling it?
Peyton's Choice 2, Peyton's Fetus Rides the Rails. Right. That's where, at the end of Peyton's Choice, Peyton's fetus escapes. And
it becomes a hobo and rides hitchhiking. The rails.
Yeah, rides the rails with a bunch of hobos.
With his stick and bandana full of whatever he owns.
With his little knapsack at the end of a stick slung over his shoulder. Little straw hat.
Get ready, everyone.
That's not really a book. Although, boy, would I love to see that book. You're willing.
It'll be a children's book.
Can I write just a fan fiction version of it? I'll just do that. Okay, yeah, that is patreon.com/Kimberly A. Johnson. By the way, there's an extra E in Kimberly.
Right, and the L-E-Y.
L-E-Y. I was going to say you have to guess where the extra E goes.
And then also on Amazon.
Yeah, patreon.com/startmeup also. Meanwhile, Sexy Liberal Podcast Network, all the greatest shows on the internets. Jody Hamilton's From the Bunker podcast. I don't know why I almost said Holly there. I just called Jody Hamilton Holly. Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour, Randy Rhodes After Hour Show, Dino Badala's I Want to Be Your Muslim Friend, Sanity with John Fugelsang, The Final Word with Frangela, The Great Rude Pundit, Proud Resister, Dana Goldberg, and so many more. That's sexyliberal.com. Oh, and this show is part of it too. How about that? Again, tell all your friends about sexyliberal.com and listen wherever you get your podcasts. All right, that's it for the show. See you on our Patreon page. Our postmortem show is coming up next. Patreon.com/Bob Seska Show or just BobSeskaShow.com. Take care, folks. Bye-bye. Bye.
Benjamin Netanyahu.
The old rules are the new rules, the new rules are the old rules. These rules were here all along.
Hey, it's Stephanie Miller, America's original sexy liberal, if you don't count Millard Fillmore. Come join us for the Happy Hour podcast. You're probably already doing plenty of drinking and swearing with this stain of a president in office. Well, join me and my celebrity and comedian friends for a raunchy, uncensored ride through politics and pop culture, pants optional.